Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
And welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Brother Nichols, you were in the Capitol Rotunda when Tony Evers, Mandela Barnes, Sarah Godlewski, Josh Call, and Doug LaFollette were all sworn in. Can you describe what it was like in that building?
It felt pretty good. It was a very open, very freewheeling, good-spirited moment. There's no other way to say it. You could move around the Capitol easily, even though there was a ton of people. It was packed with folks. Folks seemed to be, you know, in incredibly high spirits. A lot of the disappointment and, frankly, dysfunction of the lame duck period seemed to be put aside. And there really was a focus on going forward. And the interesting thing was that some days you come into with a lot of expectations, and then they sort of, you know, the expectations fade or you get used to it. This is very different. As the day proceeded inside the Capitol, you really saw sort of a rising sense of enthusiasm. By the time the speeches began, you had already had introductions, which had a lot of poignancy to him, especially when former Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court, Shirley Abrahamson, was introduced, and there was just a roaring, thunderous, standing ovation, because, of course, Abrahamson was one of the great targets of the Walker era. Scott Walker and his allies sought to disempower her in all sorts of ways and went against her, you know, in a repeated and long-term battle. But then when they got to the speeches by the people who were elected in November, beginning with Sarah Godlewski and going through Doug LaFollette and Josh Call, Mandela Barnes, and finally Tony Evers, you could just see almost a rising crescendo of excitement, you know, and enthusiasm. And so it was exactly what an inauguration is supposed to be. And Sly, you and I have been around inaugurations that didn't go well. Reference President Trump's back in 2017.
Oh, that didn't go well? Really?
Huh. Remember when he gave his speech, you know, about the, you know, it's like, you know, I don't know, I hope I can recreate some of the enthusiasm.
I remember George W. Bush saying, what the hell is this?
Yeah, so it's like, we're all going to hell for a speech, right? You know, it's like an American carnage kind of thing. It was Stephen Miller at his best.
Well, there weren't many people there. So.
No. And so, you know, that was an inauguration that just really kind of, like, the air was sucked out of it as it progressed. And frankly, even Barack Obama's first inauguration, with all the enthusiasm and excitement.
Yeah, he didn't give a good speech that day.
Well, his speech was realistic because of the moment that they were in. But it you know, I mean, it caused a lot of people to feel like, oh, wow, this is going to be hard.
Although I enjoyed Aretha Franklin singing that day. That was great.
Everything about it was good in a lot of ways. But this inauguration at the Capitol had an energy and a spirit to it that was very positive.
Well, I put out on Facebook as the Hispanic Strings Choir from Milwaukee was singing in Spanish. what a marked change that was. African American choirs. There were other choirs from outstate, obviously from Eau Claire, yeah, and some other spots, but it was really a tribute to Tony Evers. You can tell his genuine love for education and kids and diversity. I mean, it's not, for some people, it's checking the boxes, but as you heard him, he kept reiterating, thank these kids.
No, he has always volunteered that. And I would suggest that that the critical point in that trajectory, actually, there's a couple points, and they were relatively closely related. When Mandela Barnes spoke, and he referenced Bell Phillips, there was an incredible sort of surge of energy that went through the room. And that's important to understand.
Well, let's play that. Here it is.
To not just take an oath of office, but to make an oath of dedication to all who call this place home. There are so many whose commitment and sacrifice made this moment possible. People like Vail Phillips, I called her. She was a friend of mine who stood here exactly 40 years ago as the first and until now the only African American elected to statewide office. The gravity of this moment is not lost on me as we strive for equity for all people in a place that has not always met its commitment. In a state that must deal with extreme racial imbalance, we seek to not only change what is possible, but to change what is expected. Time will judge us by what we do at this moment, because above and beyond making history, we must strive to make a difference.
The gratitude that he showed in that speech towards his parents and everyone else that had made a difference in his life was really pretty special.
It was also instructive. It was
Can you speak up a little bit, John?
I was going to say it was also instructive. It was an educational speech, and this is why I connected to what you were saying about Tony Evers and his enthusiasm for education, his enthusiasm for teaching. What Mandela Barnes did there was artful. He made connections between the past and the present. He highlighted others. But also then use that to make a point about what they sought to achieve. It was a very, very powerful transition moment, if you will, rooted in the past, yet clearly forward-looking. And I would say similarly, when the organizers of the inaugural decided to have a Native American woman make the introduction of Tony Evers, that was an incredibly well thought and well constructed moment in this inauguration, because it really, I mean, it made much deeper connections, much more historic connections than we have had in, previous inaugurals. It was very powerful, and especially the woman who spoke, because she referenced the circumstance of Native Americans, also noted, if you listen, to the number of women, the number of people of color who were coming into positions of authority. This was a very, very important part of an overall arc of messaging that was powerful.
All right. On the very same day that Tony Evers was sworn in as Wisconsin's 46th governor, Gavin Newsom was sworn in as California's governor in Sacramento. And he's an impressive guy, but you look at the stylistically the difference between Tony Evers and Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom's pretty prototypical of a young and up-and-coming politician. Tony Evers is such a unique character, because if I told you, you know, 8 years ago, who's going to lead us across the Rubicon, you know, what superhero is going to take the Walker machine down, I don't think you would have said Tony Evers.
No, I don't think you would have, although in hindsight, there's a lot of logic to it. And look, the thing about Tony Evers is that in many ways he harkens back to a Wisconsin archetype, and it's one that a lot of people from all sorts of different backgrounds respect and value, and that is a sort of historic progressive tradition built around the Wisconsin idea. Again, this notion that education and opportunity could be made real for the whole state, that it would be spread to every corner of it. That's one of the great underpinnings of progressivism, which was in the days of Robert M. La Follette and Phil La Follette and their followers, about making sure that power and promise was not, you know, kind of locked into a couple of cities, right, Madison, maybe Milwaukee, that it was spread all over the whole of the state. And Evers coming out of Plymouth, Wisconsin, really was able, I think, to connect with that for a lot of people again, urban and rural folks. And I interviewed him shortly before he took office, and he said a fascinating thing. It would have total resonance with people who grew up in really rural areas. I asked him if, you know, his background had some influence on his ability to communicate with people from all sorts of different backgrounds, from all sorts of different circumstances, and different political ideologies. And he said, of course it did, because he had to ride his bike 4 miles into Plymouth from the rural, you know, spot where he grew up, to play baseball or basketball or whatever he was going to do. And as a result, he was very enthusiastic to meet people, to make friends, to make connections with them. And that's a very Wisconsin thing.
Here he is in his inaugural speech.
The challenges we face can only be fixed by finding solutions together. You know, 170 years ago, our forefathers charged us with being industrious and innovative. They gave us a mandate to go forward. We face that calling here today. We must turn the page on the tired politics of the past. We must lead by example. It's time to remake and repair our state and reclaim our better history. The people of Wisconsin demanded a change this November, and that change is coming. But that change won't happen without all of us. So that hard work begins here today. It begins in our classroom and our playgrounds, where our kids learn to be accepting and treat each other with kindness and respect, regardless of whether their parents were born here, what their circumstances are, and no matter their identity. It begins in campuses and at our coffee shops, on sidewalks and houses of worship, where we will not fear diversity or our differences, but we will find value in discourse and dialogue and make us better people and better citizens. What a thought. Begins with valuing the dignity of all our workers, from paper mills to nursing homes, restaurants to cranberry farms and villages, village halls to highways, by recognizing that every person has meaning and each job a purpose, none more important than any other.
Now, you can bet I really liked that part.
It did, but Sly, just think about this. You said earlier, and I think quite appropriately, you know, who would have thought that Tony Evers would be the guy who'd lead us across the Rubicon, right? You know? And then here, but listen to that speech there.
Yep.
Who would have thought that Tony Evers would have people, you know, literally be, you know, somewhat shouting over sustained applause? As a crowd
right.
on its feet was cheering, you know,
because when he started as a candidate, frankly, he wasn't good. He couldn't work a room. He didn't know how to work a room. His speaking at some of the early debates was terrible. He wasn't ready in the very beginning. Same with Mandela. When Mandela started as a public servant, he was just a kid. First couple times he came on the radio, he was so bashful. You listen to both of them. And it's remarkable how far they've come in a pretty short period of time.
Well, I think that's always a measure of a good political figure, of an able political figure, is that they grow into their moment. If we were to look back at someone like Franklin Roosevelt, what you would say is that, you know, Roosevelt in his early political endeavors wasn't all that good at it. He got a lot better. And there are many, many other...
John Kennedy wasn't that good at it.
Right.
Right?
We see this again and again and again. And so it is the great challenge in politics and in life is that you grow in your ability. I'll give you a very good example. Barack Obama is, you know, was always a very, very good writer, very, very good speaker, very strong communicator. But there is simply no question that if you looked at the arc of his presidency, everything that they threw in his way, he got better and better at it. He got stronger and stronger. I have no doubt that Obama finished his presidency as, you know, one of the most able people ever to hold that office, right? But it was because he kept learning. He kept developing skills. And we want this in our leaders, right? We want people who begin with their strengths, right? And who build on them. And
just like Donald Trump.
Maybe that's a challenge. But if we look at Evers and Mandela Barnes and frankly Josh Call, the other folks who were elected, they come to power not as the likely suspects, right? Not as the predictable folks, but as folks who, you know, obviously succeeded at, politically at a critical point, and I think recognize that their strength, their abilities will be best realized if they continue to develop them, right? Not say, oh, I'm great, I got here, and this is who I'm going to be. I think that was Scott Walker's great failure, right? Scott Walker was better as a candidate in 2010 than he ever was as governor. And I think that's a lesson for us. You need to grow in office, not decline.
We'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation at sliceoffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, Madison Teachers Incorporated, our friends at Madison Teamsters, Local 695, and of course, our friends with Madison Firefighters, Local 311. All right, comrade, let's talk a little bit more about what happened that day, because we're kind of doing a recap of the whole event here and what started a very big change in state government. This is the Secretary of State, who's serving his 11th term, Doug La Follette.
First, I want to thank the millions plus people who voted for me. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve the people of Wisconsin for these many, many years. As the only statewide elected Democrat, it's been very lonely this past 8 years. Today, it feels great to welcome my colleagues to our great Capitol building. I wish everyone a very good new year and hope the legislature will allow us to accomplish some important things concerning the environment, and education, and health care. Working together, we can restore our state's great progressive tradition. Again, good. As Bob La Follette, whose statue is right over there, would want us to do. Again, I thank you all and look forward to working for you for the next 4 years. This is Wisconsin. Our motto is forward. Thank you.
When's the last time an incoming governor let him speak? When's the last time that happened?
Let a lot of people speak in the past,
right?
But that is a very significant point you make. And also, wasn't that a small jewel of a speech, right?
It was.
It was very short, and yet went right to the heart of the matter. I hope the legislature will let us do good things, right? I mean, acknowledging the challenges that exist, but also doing something that was needed and also incredibly valuable. And that was pointing out that bust of Robert M. La Follette. Remember that Scott Walker said in a speech in Arizona, not in Wisconsin, he would never have given this speech in Wisconsin. But down in Arizona, as he was running around the country collecting money and campaigning for president, things like that, he said, oh, when I was sworn in as governor, I made sure that, you know, I did it on another side of the Capitol, kind of out of view of that bust of Robert M. LaFollette, because all the progressives in Wisconsin really like that LaFollette guy. But I wanted to, you know, make a break from that, paraphrasing there. But essentially that was Walker's message. And then here is Doug LaFollette, a distant relative, saying, no, we embrace that. We are glad that this inaugural ceremony is being watched over by the greatest progressive in Wisconsin history.
Here is Attorney General Josh Call, who came in and laid down the gauntlet.
But I want to make clear that irrespective of the action taken by the lame duck legislature, the priorities of the Wisconsin Department of Justice are changing. We will lead on public safety issues, and that will include advocating for policies that make our communities stronger. We'll revitalize the Environmental Protection Unit and bolster our consumer protection efforts. And we will stand up against the federal government when we need to do so to protect Wisconsinites. In deciding how to confront the challenges we face, there will be significant, real differences of opinion. But as we debate the issues, let's be sure to remember that adherence to the principles of our democracy must take precedence over the policy agendas of the day.
Well, that was quite a moment, wasn't it?
Again, this is the one point at which I would have liked to have taken everybody who's listening who wasn't there and brought him along, right? Had him in the chamber there, in the rotunda of the Capitol, because there was something very electric that occurred at that moment. Josh Call began by describing the attempt by Republicans in the lame duck legislative session to disempower the new governor, the new attorney general, and really the voters of Wisconsin, to say that the will of the people would not be realized if these Republican legislators had anything to say about it. And he could have, Call could have been bitter. He could have been angry. Instead, he recounted it, and then he simply said, it didn't work. They failed. The priorities of this office will change. He didn't deny the challenges that lie ahead, that there will be wrangling over these power grab issues and that. But he made it absolutely clear that on the issues, he would change the direction of this office. And in many ways there, I think for those of us who know where Josh comes from, the son of former Attorney General Peg Lautenschlager, I just think a lot of us who were there thought, you know, he really is his mother's son.
So, there was a different attitude from the other wing of the Capitol, the Assembly wing, House of Representatives, the Assembly, the lower house. The Assembly Speaker decided to be less than gracious on Election Day, on the swearing-in day. Here he is.
Today marks the return of divided government in Wisconsin.
Speaker Robin Voss spoke to the representatives, insisting progress made on the economy, education, and unemployment under Governor Walker will be maintained despite new Democratic faces in the Assembly.
So even though the vast majority of us inside this chamber might not prefer it, we won't be driving in just the right lane anymore, and we certainly won't be driving in the far left lane. We will find a way to drive in the center lane.
The duties as members of the Senate...
Oh. That's such a little speech. That is such a petty way to describe the situation. It really serves no purpose.
Yeah, and a bad analogy too. Right?
Right.
Driving in the center lane. You know, Wisconsin.
What does it even mean?
Well, I guess you hope. Apparently, Robin Voss spends a lot of time on three-lane, you know, superhighways, whereas most Wisconsinites are driving on two-lane roads, where the center lane, if you will, is a little bit dangerous, right? And so, with all due respect to his attempt at an analogy, Robin Voss, who is not a stupid man, could have given a perfect speech in that moment. He could have said, look, some people are mad at us for what we did in the lame duck. We did it because we believe in, you know, rebalancing power in this state, but we didn't do it out of, you know, just pure partisan motive hatred. Now, I know you and I might disagree with him on that, but he could explain it, and then he could go forward and say, I really believe we can achieve great things, and then start talking about where there might be areas of agreement. He could have done a speech that people would have listened to and treated seriously and said it had meaning. Instead, he again perpetuated this fantasy that having been elected, you know, down in Burlington and in Western Racine County, he is, you know, somehow given the authority to run the state, that he will define, you know, the direction the state heads and what lane we will do it in.
Well, we're off to a really interesting start. Tony Evers has signaled that, in fact, he is going to try to draw Wisconsin's name off the lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act. He thinks he's found a way to do it that follows within the law. Scott Fitzgerald is already screaming bloody murder.
Yes.
What do you make of the first few days of the Evers administration?
Well, I think that obviously the headlines are around these clashes, but it's very, very important to also note that in the first days of Tony Evers' administration, he did some things that got a bit of notice and deserve more, sending very, very strong signals about his absolute regard and respect for the state employees of Wisconsin who were so battered during the Walker era. Very, very important message. Sending strong messages about his regard and respect for diversity and for, you know, regarding all people in this state, not just in state employment, but throughout the state. Powerful, powerful messages about ending the divisiveness and the playing groups against one another that was such a characteristic of the Walker era. That's the side of what Evers is bringing that needs to be noted, because it is really important, and it is going to, in my opinion, build a lot of enthusiasm for his governorship. And that enthusiasm then translates over into some of these issue battles. Tony Evers understands very well that he is not going to be able to, you know, kind of elbow his way around the legislature, that there are going to be real, you know, there's going to be real fights. He's going to have to use a lot of smart strategy, some of it legal strategy, some of it legislative, but also, at the heart of it, popular will. And the interesting thing is that right after they were sworn in, Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes, the next day they were up, I believe, in La Crosse. Right?
They were. Gunderson Healthcare.
Yeah.
Well, you read my mind. That's the next thing I was going to ask you. When's the last time a newly elected governor took the lieutenant governor out while he's using the bully pulpit?
Yeah, well, I've emphasized throughout this thing that I think they truly were elected as a ticket, and that, in fact, that whole ticket that was elected on November 6th sustained and supported itself, right? It's notable that at the inaugural ball on the evening after the inauguration, Tammy Baldwin kind of opened up the festivities, right? And she, too, was a part of that ticket on November 6th. And the important thing to understand about all this is I think Tony Evers is fine with that. I think he is fine with the fact that he didn't just become governor on his own. He became governor as part of a team. And Mandela Barnes, again, if we go back to earlier part of our discussion where you played that tape of him speaking at the inaugural, Mandela Barnes is a very, very skilled political figure. He knows how to communicate to people throughout this state. He also is, I will note, a former legislator and a well-regarded former legislator. And so in Mandela Barnes, Tony Evers has a partner who brings great strengths to that lieutenant governor's office. And it's notable that we've had incredibly strong lieutenant governors in the past. Barbara Lawton was a fantastic lieutenant governor. But previous governors didn't always use or utilize their partner, right? They didn't bring that lieutenant governor up to a place where they could actually contribute at the highest level. And
yeah, two come to mind. One would be Scott McCallum, and the other would be James Flynn, who was Earl's lieutenant governor. No one ever even saw him.
Well, they completely
literally disappeared. And he, and by the way, he was an able legislator. He was a former state senator. They totally discarded him. McCallum was too.
And you know what? Can I tell you just a quick side story? It was funny. I was interviewing Tony Evers about coming into the governorship, right? And he had we were talking about the speech Evers was going to give and stuff. And I said, well, one of the best speeches upon becoming governor that anybody ever gave was Scott McCallum's back in 2001 when Tommy Thompson went to Washington and McCallum stepped up to the governorship. I said, McCallum's speech was fantastic. It was really, really well done. And Evers said, intriguingly enough, someday people are going to look back much more seriously at Scott McCallum and realize that he was a strikingly able figure who really was never dealt a very very fair hand in the card game of Wisconsin politics. And I think that's true. I also think that those sorts of observations, that awareness of people's skills and their strengths, is one of the things that is going to make Evers a very successful governor.
Well, I do note this. Scott McCallum got a lot more applause in that crowd than Scott Walker.
the many Scots. I also think there is a real chance that Tony Evers will be turning to some of the people that we're talking about here, to Tommy Thompson, to Scott McCallum, to others, to try and achieve things, right? And I'm not suggesting for a second that we're headed towards some sort of bipartisan, can we all get along moment. I think there's still going to be a lot of clashes and a lot of partisan divisions. But in Mandela Barnes and Tony Evers, you see two people who are really genuinely prepared to try and pull Wisconsin together. And I don't think that either of them has a resistance to doing that with Republicans and even conservatives who are, willing to find common ground on some issues. It's a very different moment. But I emphasize, that is Wisconsin progressivism at its best. Progressivism did have an ideology, and it always has had an ideology. It is to the left on a lot of issues. But it was the unique brand of Wisconsin progressivism was always about getting things done. And that often required building coalitions, urban and rural, liberal and conservative, farm and factory. And I genuinely believe that Evers and Barnes get that.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.